You're listening to the Around Comics Book Club on Strangers in Paradise of Volume 1, brought to you by InStockTrades.com. From Chicago, this is Around Comics, the comic culture podcast, where each week our revolving panel guests talk about everything in and around the world of comic books and comics culture. And Around Comics is recorded at Dark Tower Comics and Collectibles, located at 4835 Northwestern Avenue in Chicago. 4 years, I still can't get that right. Hello, everyone. Christopher Niesman here. This is a different type of episode for Around Comics. This is our semi-monthly book club. And
it's our fifth week event.
It's the fifth week event, exactly. Yeah. And this week, we're going over Strangers in Paradise, which was Tom's pick for his book club selection.
Yes.
And if you hear the commotion in the background here, it is Tom's last live recording here at Dark Tower for Around Comics before he takes off for Worcester. So it is a night of much revelry. And
it's pronounced Worcester.
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 I can't do that.
Worcester.
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 Dude, I'm from Southern Illinois.
Worcester.
I'm lucky I can say Chicago.
You call a place spelled like Cairo, Cairo.
Yes.
So, hey. I think you know a little bit about
that's
it.
That's how it's spelled. Well, I'll tell you what. Let's jump in here. First of all, Strangers in Paradise, Volume 1 is the book that we're talking about.
The pocketbook.
It was, the pocketbook. And InStockTrades.com was kind enough to sponsor this book club like they do all of our book clubs. And you can still get this through this week. This comes out on Thursday, Friday. If you have not read this and we pique your interest in it, you can head over to InStockTrades.com and pick this up for 47% off the cover price, which makes it cheap, cheap, cheap.
Yeah,
good stuff.
Cheap.
Mm-hmm. We love those folks at InStockTrades. All right, well, Tom, this was your selection, so we'll let you start things off here. I will say before we get started in the conversation, I did enjoy it greatly. Yes, I did.
You hadn't read it previously before this?
I had started. It's one of those. It's kind of like how I was with Love and Rockets and Blankets and Box Office Poison, all these great indie, tent poles for indie comics. I had started to read it, but had never really hung in with it. I'd gotten, I think, through the first miniseries, which we'll talk about. But
yeah.
Let people know what the first pocketbook of Strangers in Paradise is about.
Well, okay, so the thing to keep in mind is that all the art, everything, all the writing and all the art is done by Terry Moore.
Mm-hmm.
He does it all. Writes art. It's his complete vision of it. It ran for a number of years as a beginning and a finite end, where it ended several years ago was the last issue. The pocketbook, I believe, collects the first miniseries, and then,
which is three issues.
And then the continuing series, issues 1 through 13, in a smaller sort of digest size style book. Personally, I don't think it loses a whole lot.
You can tell whenever you're reading it that there's a tiny bit of a recap for the time in between the first mini and then when the regular series started, which this is actually volume 1 and volume 2 of the series.
Yes.
Before the volume 3 starts, which would go into its entirety to
I think 90 or something like that. Some numbers.
So this is actually the first two volumes of Strangers in Paradise are contained in this.
It sort of defies scripture description a little bit. Because
it defies scripture?
Defies scripture. Defines description because you could say it's kind of a slice of life comic, but not really because there's elements of it that are pretty fantastical.
Sure.
Not fantastical, but not real,
as you would see in like a kind of movie, like kind of crazy out there. Kachu is a larger than life character,
exactly.
and you see she does things that you're not going to get away with in real life.
It basically follows the story of Francine and Kachu, who are two friends from high school who are now grown up. They live in the Houston area, and it sort of follows their strange relationship between the two of them. That's there's a sexual charge to it, but it's not like they're lesbians.
It's not outwardly.
Yeah, and a lot of what the book, I think, is about a lot of times is sort of going outside the definitions of, you know, like gay or lesbian or just people attracted to each other, people fall in love with each other, sort of regardless of all the sort of other things that they
It's a book about people making connections with each other regardless of you know, male, female. It's about people having true feelings of affection and love for each other that crosses those boundaries.
It starts off very much slice of life with Francine is dating a guy named Freddie Femer who you know, wants to have sex with her and she won't give in, and he breaks up with her. And the first miniseries, the first three issues, is pretty slice of life-esque in the sense that it's just deals with that relationship and catch you, you know,
as Francine's best friend, trying not just comfort her but make him pay.
Make him, yeah, definitely pay for the problems. The best way I think to think about the art is it sort of, for people that are more superhero fanish, it's kind of like Kevin Maguire-esque in a lot of the facial features.
It's very expressive.
Expressive. There's a lot of acting in the characters, and Terry Moore does a really great job of drawing people that look like people.
Yes.
Like, and making them look attractive without it being the comic booky attractiveness.
And it goes to this several times in this first pocketbook that Francine is a little chunky.
Yeah.
But you know what? She still has this aura that attracts people to her.
Yeah.
And it's I really like the way that Terry Moore did that. It's like, you don't have to have this perfect hourglass, you know, very idealized comic book figure and physique to be attractive. And they address that.
I mean, the closest you get to that in here is a mafia enforcer who's a woman. It's the closest you get to the comic book of what
the power girl type.
Yeah,
physique.
Exactly. Yeah. That's the only time you really get close to that sort of thing. And like I just mentioned, eventually there's mafia undertones mixed in. You find out that Kachu was a prostitute. Mm-hmm. And she...
not a prostitute. She was a high-end escort.
Yeah. Who was involved in the stealing of some money from a very rich mafia-involved person.
It adds, I mean, whenever you talk about this not being a true slice of life comic, it adds a real action, intrigue facet to the book. And, David gets tied up in that, and he's really kind of the third main character in the series. And he gets introduced
like
fairly early.
A young artist who's in the area who sort of gets stuck in a love triangle with Francine and Kachu. And you see that he has a relationship that you don't find out until towards the end that he's way more involved in it than you would think it is. But in between all of this stuff, there's stuff about sort of AIDS and art and all the sort of different touchstones of
when it
like
was
modern
written.
Culture. Yeah.
When was this written?
Oh, I can't remember. It's 90s mostly.
It's really early 90s is when it, or beginning of the decade. And that was obviously a much bigger in forward conscience of society was AIDS, as we were just kind of starting to figure out what this was all about,
and
it touches on that.
And in the form of telling the story, they spend a significant amount of time doing things just outside of sequential storytelling. There'll be a couple pages of text that are written like a hard-boiled, hard-boiled crime novel. And then
which were good, but you can say, okay, this is definitely Terry Moore scratching that prose itch that he wanted to write some prose. And hey, it's a independent creator-owned book, so why not? If you need to tell that much story in three pages, you can. Those were like full issues of happenings
of information there, but told in a very different style, like a very stylized Like almost like you're reading a crime novel mixed in with a
Does he go back to doing that at any point in the rest of the series? Or was that...
I think so. I've read the first couple of pocketbooks.
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to remember. This has been the first time I'd read this in a couple of years. A couple of years. So I'm trying to remember. He goes back to that sort of thing.
Because I know Ron Richard says this is one of his all-time favorite books. Yeah. So we'll have to ask Ron.
I mean, there's stuff like music. There's written music. There's poetry mixed in. It all sort of mixed into the story, and it alludes to different themes that go on in the story. So it has different layers, almost like a V for Vendetta, where they had a song sort of going through everything in it. It reminded me very much of V for Vendetta in that sense.
Well, what I like about this and some of the other books I mentioned earlier that are these kind of like long form creator own books, he gets to tell the story at his own pace and play around with some different conventions, and you never felt like anything was ever forced to get to a conclusion before he was ready to.
Yeah.
He told his story.
And characters sort of pop in and out, and there's some very extremely light moments and some really
very
sad and some really sad moments all within the spectrum of it, which I think is one of the cool things about a creator-owned book like this, is that I think you get a wider spectrum of emotion between it, between the very saddest moments and the very funniest moments.
It doesn't stay in one depth of the pool.
It
definitely floats around to crazy, funny things from what usually catch you doing these absurdly insane things, and then some really sad. Well, actually, easily the saddest moment in the book involved catch you with
exactly.
Death of her friend. So
and there, it's funny because if you read just the first three, I think you'd have a very different idea of what the whole thing would be like. Like, it takes a little bit for the more mafia-esque portions of it. It takes till you get to what was volume two before you really start. I mean, stuff that happens in the first three is definitely referenced in the volume two portion of it, and it all sort of ties together like that. It's a very mysterious portion.
I don't know if that was the original intention.
No, or if it just was like, let's, with this story and let's just keep going with these characters. But it's cool in the sense that you don't know everything about the characters either, and you can get through the first volume and you still feel like there's more stuff to find out about them. You don't know every single thing that they're... You feel like you know them, but you also feel like there's other things that are going to happen and there's other stuff that I want to know about.
Just like Catchu, whenever we find out that she had been an escort, been a prostitute, that was a big revelation. But, we even get to look into Francine's past a little bit, and the reason that she didn't sleep with Freddie is, she had gone through a string of bad relationships, some very sexually active relationships, and whenever she got to that point in the relationship, it usually ended badly, and so we find out that about her later on, and that Catchu's not the only one who has had a bumpy sexual history.
Exactly. So and the way that's done too is really cool, in the sense that you don't know that at all until a certain point. Then all of a sudden everything starts to make more sense. And you have to love a character named Freddie Femer. There's fantastical.
Mm-hmm.
There's fantastical right there. Though I do kind of feel like Freddie Femer is maybe the one portion of it that could feel weirdly dated.
He felt weirdly dated.
Yeah,
I think that worked.
It's intentional.
Actually.
I think it's intentional, but
he was like an '80s hangover.
In a book that he seemed sort of weirdly out of place in it. Now, it probably was intentional to make him
this
that
is the guy
like,
that kept dressing like Don Johnson from Miami Vice, probably a couple of years later than he should have.
Exactly. He's going to marry an aerobics instructor. It's like inside this other story that's very modern and sort of timeless, there's this very like 80s-ish portion, this sort of like tawdry, like sort of cheesy element that's mixed in just with everything else that's going on. And it works for a lot of good comic, very good comic relief.
Well, you know, I told you I had started reading this a couple years ago, and it didn't grab me. And that just happens with comics sometimes. You know, it's, you're not in the right, you know, frame of mind to read it or digest it. This time around, I got into it, and really it turned into a book that I didn't want to put down. You get past that, like, fifth issue hump, you know, after the first miniseries, and then you get into the regular, you know, volume two of the series, and now you want to know what happens each issue.
Yeah, you want to know more and more, and he leaves hints to, even when things get lighter towards the end, there's the hint that something bad's going to happen again, you know, even as it starts to become more of like a slapstick, like, let's go to Hawaii to break up this wedding, you know, type.
Which was a hilarious scene.
You know, it was an entirely, all of a sudden it becomes very light, but in the background there's very much the menace of something bad happening.
If I had planned to marry Marta in Hawaii, and we had come up with some ridiculous marriage ceremony.
Nude under a waterfall.
That is how it would have turned out for us. It's like, it would have been a cold waterfall, would have been freezing to death, and yeah, not that Marta would ever get married naked with me under a waterfall.
No one wants to see you getting married naked under a waterfall.
That's Tom, I'm hurt.
No, I'm just telling you.
Nobody needs to see that much body
nobody
hair.
Nobody needs to see. Yeah, it'd be some sort of Hawaiian bear got fell into the pool. I have to get animal control to get involved
stat.
With this. Yes, stat. Immediately.
But yeah, so you have great moments like that, and it's we're talking about this in a very non-linear way. There are these, and a lot of that is because there are these great moments. You know, it's kind of like whenever you talk about a really funny movie. I just watched The Hangover last night, and I was talking about that at work, and you can kind of talk about these the same way. It's like, oh, and this happened, and I remember this. Yeah. And so there are these great moments that the book is cut into, but in a very linear way, you begin to get to know these characters and actually care about them. You know, Kachu is an incredibly sympathetic character, but she's just so over the top in what she does that you want to strangle her sometimes, but you really do fall in love with her because of what a good heart she has, even though she's much more in the real world than Francine is. Francine has a much more romanticized view of life and the world, I think.
Yeah, and Ketchu's just a little bit more damaged.
And I think that she very much feels like she needs to be there to protect Francine.
Yeah, I get that sense that, well, especially with the whole relationship with Freddy, that she, you know, she desperately wants to keep Freddy away from Francine because, you know, she's just trying to protect her, protect her friend, because she's had, you know, the problems Francine's had probably don't really compare to the problems that Kachu's had in her history. And just in flipping through the book, I also want to mention that Terry Moore draws a crying woman pretty well.
Anything with emotion, and this is a really emotional book. I mean, it's all built on, I mean, because there are no superheroes, there are no, you know, you have the crime, you know, mafia story, but this book is all about the emotional states of these people, from, you know, being overjoyed to distressed to, you know, everything. It goes across the spectrum, and he captures every one of those emotions. It's amazing.
And he pulls all the soap opera tricks of just when think Francine and Kachu are going to be like, we're in love with each other, we're a couple, something happens that...
Here comes David.
Yeah, here comes David. Here's something to not let that happen. So that tension's always sort of present.
And you kind of root for David, but at that point, you're rooting for Francine and Kachu to be happy with each other. And so it kind of catches you as the reader. It's like, oh, you know, I don't know which way I want this to go.
Yeah, there's not like the evil boyfriend.
He's a good guy.
Yeah, there's not the evil one in the in the triangle where you're like, oh, I hope that person loses. I hope that person loses out. And it's an actual triangle.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. Very true. Very true.
It could go any way. Any combo of the two is a possibility.
Yeah. And we'll see later if I don't know if Francine and David ever have have feelings for each other.
I'm not going to tell you.
I could easily see that happening.
Yeah, you could see a little bit that Francine was starting to worry that she was falling in love with David.
Yeah, she did. She had that whole dream sequence. Yeah. So, because Catchy was treating him like dirt, and I think that she felt very sorry for him, and maybe even felt a little bit like Catchy does about Francine, that she needed to kind of protect David, you know, from Catchy breaking his heart.
From her mad friend.
Yeah, yeah. Absolutely crazy. Well, do we have anything else to say about Strangers in Paradise here?
I think we're all good.
Go read it, I guess, is the recommendation.
Yeah.
I enjoyed it mightily.
Are you gonna keep going?
Yes, I am. I don't know if I'm gonna jump right back. I guess I could jump right back in.
Yeah.
Yeah, heck, I might as well. I'll pick up the volume 2 pocketbook and mix that in. You know, I just took on the Lone Wolf and Cub.
Oh, jeez.
Which is, I've got 26 volumes of that to go, so
I'll
have
to... You're going to be occupied for a long time.
Well, you know, reading love stories and stories about people being, you know, cut in half with Japanese swords.
You gotta
balance things out.
You gotta balance it all out. You don't want everything to be about getting chopped in half by a samurai sword.
Well, I tell you what,
probably most of it. You probably want most of it to be, but not all of it. No one wants everything to be about getting chopped in half.
Let me see here. You want to announce the next book club?
You announce it. It's your pick.
Let me get it's in my bag. Here, you keep talking. Say something about it.
Oh, okay. Hi, everyone. There's a lot of people in the store. It's sort of distracting, actually.
All right. Okay. There it is. Okay. This will be, as we announced on Monday, this will be our last book club selection.
Yes.
And I'm being very selfish about this one.
Yes.
I'm dipping into my childhood nostalgia, and this is a book that I absolutely fell in love with when I was growing up. I was thinking about it.
Archie.
we've talked on the show a lot about stuff like Chaikin's American Flag, which influenced Sal so much, and the Badger, and you look at a bunch of the really awesome Nexus, all the great independent titles that were coming out in the mid and late 80s. I loved Alien Legion.
All right,
you've been
talking about this a lot, my friend.
It is now my fear about this is whenever you suggest something to folks that you hold in such high regard from your childhood, you kind of fear that it's not going to hold up. I've been going back and rereading this. Now, still, I've got rose-colored glasses because I remember it so fondly, but I think it actually holds up really well and is it's pretty apparent that this has been pretty influential for a lot of the cosmic type stories that we read today, Guardians of the Galaxy. Obviously, if you're a Fear Agent fan, I think that you'll dig this. Any sort of I think there's even like Green Lantern Corps vibe that you will get from this.
Right.
So our book club selection is the Alien Legion Omnibus Volume 1. It's from Dark Horse. What's it retail for?
$24.95,
but there'll be a discount on this at instocktrades.com, so go in and check that out. They usually do a 47% off the cover price, so you'll be looking at getting it for what is that, about 13-14 bucks?
I don't know, Chris. I don't have a spread. I only do math through spreadsheets. I can't do math in my head.
One of my favorite series of all time. It had been collected for a while through Checker, and then Dark Horse got the rights to reprint it, and they've done a wonderful job with the repackaging of it. The Checker collections, I didn't really like the coloring or the reproduction. These are really, really nice.
Who originally published it? Was it Epic?
It was Epic. Yeah, absolutely. It was one of the longest running series at Epic.
All right.
So, and there was the original series, and they relaunched it, and then there was a bunch of minis. Ostrander, Carl Potts. Carl Potts, this is really what I what I think of whenever I think of Carl Potts. Chuck Dixon wrote a bunch of Alien Legion. So our first volume here is fantastic. And that is a parting gift for you, Tom.
Oh, wait, thank you.
So there you go. So,
I see some Larry Stroman in here.
Yeah, well, oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Great, great fun stuff. And maybe you can read that on the flight to Worcester.
Well, we'll be driving. So okay. I'll read it when I get there. Okay. And I don't have shit to do in Worcester.
There you go.
I have a lot of time to read old comics.
Yeah, and you know what? We'll have to do this one over the Skype.
Yeah, we will.
So we'll be back.
I'll have an accent. Alien Legion. A bunch of spaceships. I'm trying to think of a war. Fighting a space war.
There you go. Nice. So hopefully we'll be back in about a month, 6 weeks or so. Just let me know whenever you're
Fifth week event.
Thank you so much for listening. Hope you enjoyed Strangers in Paradise. If you haven't read it, definitely high recommendation. Go out, pick it up, and then grab Alien Legion Omnibus Volume 1. You can get that at instocktrades.com. And we'll be back again on Monday with Tom's last live show here in Chicago.
It's the last time I'll be alive. Last time I'll be live.
Yeah. That's it.
To hear. I mean, it's always been recorded for you, the listener. You've never heard me live. You don't know what you've missed. It's all been edited out.
Actually,
all the good
I think,
stuff.
And it looks like we're going on a high note. I think this is the most people we've ever had in this. You are loved. You are much loved, Tom.
Yeah, I mean, there's lots of people here.
Yeah, and two girls.
Most ever showed up for anything with me.
Two, even.
Two.
All right, folks, thank you very much. Have a great rest of your week and weekend. We'll be back on Monday with another full-length episode. In the meantime.
In between time.
We'll be everywhere in
and around Alien Legion.
Yeah, baby.
What if I just get on and I'm just like, this book sucked, Chris.
You'll break my heart
and
I'll hang up.
Even if I hated it, I don't think I could tell you.
You will break my heart and I'll hang up.
I won't hate it.